Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Mostly clear, the low around 30 degrees. Sunny again tomorrow, the high near 60 degrees. Right now it's 46 degrees in Nashville at 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. It's strange to actually have to govern a country when there's a political campaign going on. Campaigning is so much more fun. All those debates and accusations. So in order to compete in the ratings, this week the president started berating CNN's John King. We'll ask what he really said, plus award-winning children's author Jack Gantos tells us how to keep those kids quiet back there. And Carl Castle warns me to never, ever cross my colleagues at NPR News.
They already know more about you than your wife does.
We'll ask who really is all-knowing and all-seeing on our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. With the Florida primary the day after tomorrow, Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich are working the Sunshine State today while continuing to level attacks against one another. NPR's Don Gagne reports.
Romney, with help from supporters that include 2008 GOP nominee John McCain, has been hammering Gingrich's record as Speaker of the House in the 1990s. Romney called Gingrich a failed leader. Gingrich, meanwhile, has been going after Romney's record while governor of Massachusetts and accusing Romney of being dishonest in his portrayal of his past. Polls in Florida give Romney a lead. Gingrich says Romney's campaign is a product of the big money establishment.
There's no question he can raise more money from Wall Street than I can, and he has big institutions pouring money into him. What I want to do is have people power.
Gingrich also vowed yesterday to stay in the race until the convention, regardless of the outcome in Florida on Tuesday. Don Gagne, NPR News, Tampa.
Herman Cain is endorsing Gingrich for the nomination. Cain called his former rival a patriot who's not afraid of bold ideas. The former executive had suspended his own campaign after some women accused him of unwanted sexual advances. Cain remains popular with the Tea Party. The Syrian military used tanks and armored vehicles against army defectors in the suburbs of Damascus today. Activists say at least 12 people were killed. The United Nations says thousands of people have died since the uprising against the president began last March. The leader of the militant group Hamas is on a visit to Jordan. NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro reports that he's meeting with Jordan's King Abdullah.
Khaled Mishal is on a tour of the region. The Hamas leader has had to move his operations out of Syria because of the ongoing unrest there. Jordan says it won't allow Hamas to reopen its offices, closed since 1999 when Hamas was expelled from the Hashemite kingdom. But King Abdullah is meeting with Mishal as part of an outreach towards previously shunned Islamist groups. The Arab Spring has changed the face of the Middle East. Islamists across the region are gaining political power through the ballot box, and Jordan is trying to engage with them. Jordan has also recently sponsored a round of failed peace talks between the Israelis and Palestinians, and the meeting with Hamas's most senior political figure is seen as an attempt to play a mediating role also in that ongoing conflict. Lourdes Garcia Navarro, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Russians staged a rolling protest in Moscow today against Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. Thousands of cars drove through the central part of the city, flying white ribbons or white balloons, the symbol of the opposition, which began as protests against a parliamentary election last month. The cars range from luxury sedans to old cars from the Soviet era. More protesters stood along the side of the road waving white ribbons and flags. The demonstrators claim Putin's party stole last month's election. Putin is expected to win the March 4th election for president. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Police in Oakland, California arrested about 300 protesters yesterday connected to the Occupy Wall Street movement. During the day-long demonstration, protesters threw rocks, tore down fencing at a convention center, and broke into City Hall. Police responded with smoke and tear gas. Some of the protesters said the demonstration started out peacefully, and the police responded with force. Police in Florida say heavy smoke and fog may have caused a series of accidents early this morning on Interstate 75 near Gainesville. 9 people died. In men's tennis, Novak Djokovic won the Australian Open today, the first Grand Slam tournament of the year. Stuart Cohen reports from Sydney. The five-set match went on for nearly 6 hours.
Novak Djokovic faced off against world number two Rafael Nadal in the longest match in Australian Open history. With both men playing championship-worthy tennis, Nadal took an early lead, winning a nearly hour-and-a-half-long first set, 7-5. Djokovic came right back in the second set with a 6-4 win. He then wore down the Spaniard in the third set to win 6-2. A threat of rain in the fourth set gave both players a break at the four-hour mark while organizers closed the roof on the arena. Nadal used the rest to his advantage, coming from behind to force a tiebreak and win the set 7-6. With both players exhausted in the fifth set, Djokovic used the last of his energy to win the grueling set 7-5. This is the third Australian Open win for Djokovic. He's now the reigning champion in three of the four Grand Slam tournaments. For NPR News, I'm Stuart Cohen in Sydney.
In men's college basketball, Towson State ended its own record last night. It won. It beat North Carolina Wilmington 66-61 after losing 41 games in a row. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, working to make genome-driven cancer care the next standard at VanderbiltHealth.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great show for you today. We got a great show for you today. We are especially excited by our guest this week, Jack Gantos. This week became the only Newbery Award-winning children's author to have served time in a federal prison for drug smuggling. This is true. Here's Carl reading an excerpt from Jack's winning book.
See Jack. Jack has a shiv. Jack says, back off. I'll cut you.
So, Jack Gantos joins us later. Right now, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-924-8924. That's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. Hey, it's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is John Altman from Pelahatchie, Mississippi.
Pelahatchie, Mississippi. I have not been there. Where is that?
It is about 30 miles east of the state capital, Jackson.
Okay. It can be beautiful country down there. What do you do?
I am a United Methodist pastor and a hospice chaplain.
Oh, wow. So you're doing good work.
Well, thank you.
I bet you expected me to say something snarky, didn't you?
I think I said Peter won't be able to mock that.
Yeah. Now I know when I'm beaten. Well, welcome to the show, John. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a Second City and Colbert Report alum, Mr. Peter Gross is here.
Hi, John.
Next, one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, the very reliable Roxanne Roberts is here.
Hello, John.
And lastly, a comedian and a host at Vocalo.org, it is Brian Babylon.
Hey, hey, John, how are you?
John, welcome to our show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl this time. Carl Cass will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly explain or identify two of them. Do that, you'll win Carl's voice on your voicemail. You ready to go?
Yes.
Here we go. Here is your first quote.
With a rule like that, I guess it was worth crying over spilt milk.
Yeah, that's the second time this week that didn't get a laugh. That knee slapper was the comedy highlight of what big speech this week?
The State of the Union.
Yes, indeed. With that joke, the State of the Union, yes, you got it right. With that joke, President Obama finally proved he wasn't born to a Kenyan anti-colonialist in Nairobi. He was born to my Uncle Morty in Flatfoot. Analysts agreed it was the lamest joke in a State of the Union ever, at least since Nixon went with Eisenhower. I hardly knew her.
I liked it. I liked it because, A, it was a dorky joke, and he thought it was funny, which it sort of brings out the... He's kind of a dork. I mean, come on.
Kind of. He's the dork in chief.
Yeah. I actually read an analysis that said that his team carefully planned for him to tell a lame joke so as to connect with America, who also tell lame jokes.
Like, oh, he's one of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Got it.
I'll bet Obama's going to ask McConnell to pull his finger. Then he'd be a lot like me.
Now, the Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana, he gave the Republican response. He said that in the GOP's view, this isn't a nation of have and have-nots, but, quote, a nation of haves and soon-to-haves. That's right, guys sleeping under a bridge, you're soon to have tuberculosis. Congratulations!
Are you serious? That's the new spin?
That's what he said.
Okay, that makes me feel better about myself. Yeah. I soon will be okay.
No, you have an opportunity to be okay. That doesn't mean you're going to be okay.
Right. You're not broke, you're pre-rich.
There you go. There you go. Pre-rich.
Pre-rich.
The new spin.
All right, John, here is your next quote. It was someone talking about his multiple affairs and marriages and affairs.
It may make me more normal than somebody who wanders around seeming perfect and maybe not understanding the human condition.
Who says his history of adultery makes him a better presidential candidate?
Newt Gingrich.
Yes, indeed. By comparing himself to someone who, quote, wanders around seeming perfect, Gingrich was obviously referring to Mitt Romney, who might have other qualifications, but, you know, since he didn't cheat on two different wives, what does he know about life? But even Gingrich, in this defense, did not go as far as Dr. Keith Ablow. He is a Fox News contributor. And he wrote that Newt's marital history actually proves he'd make a better candidate because he's such a great guy that at least three women decided, quote, they wanted to spend the rest of their lives with him, unquote.
How'd that work out?
I know. Well, the point is, he's like, well, three women can't be wrong about the guy, even if two of them ended up being really wrong about the guy.
So and plus, America's only wants to spend 4, maybe 8 years with him, you know. We're going to get divorced from him anyway. It's not like... Yeah, a lifetime with Gingrich.
That's the Newt cycle. You know, he's good for about 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he's going to move on to another country. Yeah. You know?
Trust me, I will find another country
the
attractive.
The problem is, in like year 7, we're going to find out that since year 4, he's been sleeping with Mexico. Yeah. And he's going to come and he's going to ask us for like an open presidency.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be Mexico.
You don't think so?
Something tells me it's not going to be Mexico.
This was the week that the conservative establishment realized just how close Newt was to winning the nomination. They went to DEFCON 5. They paid for PAC ads. They wrote op-eds and blogs that said Newt wasn't really a conservative and that he's dangerously unstable. So Newt Gingrich responded to these accusations that he was crazy by promising, and he did this, that by the end of his second term, we'd have a permanent base on the moon. He did that. He started the speech by saying, they called me crazy, I tell you. Crazy! I'll show them.
I'll be on my 9th wife. We'll live on the moon. Reagan will be alive again. We will be in utopia.
At the debate on Thursday, more than anything, it was a contest between Romney and Gingrich to prove who was more like Ronald Reagan. Romney, for instance, said just this week he had told the decorators in his 4th home to tear down this wall. Because I want a picture window.
Romney has Reagan's hair, right?
He does have those movies. That's true.
And Newt has eaten all of Reagan's jelly beans.
That's true. All right, very good, John. Here is your last quote.
They already know more about you than your wife does.
Now, that was Larry Dignan of the tech site ZDNet. He was telling us there's nothing we can do now that what big internet company is going to be prying even deeper into our privacy?
Google.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, you may remember Google, yes. You may remember that when Google started, their motto was, don't be evil. Well, now they've revised it to... So Google modified its privacy policy so now that all of its services know everything about you. They share information.
It would be great if you were watching like a keyboard cat video on YouTube and then all of a sudden like a ad for cat food came up.
That's pretty much what
that's
happened.
What's yeah, happen.
That is what's going to happen.
This is interesting.
Because that's not why you're watching keyboard cat.
One of the things that people have discovered this week is that Google collects information on your computer in which they figure out, based on what you do, who you are, your age, your sex, and your interests. So, for example, I did this, and Google thinks I'm a man. That's good. They think I'm 55 to 60. That's not so good.
Well, maybe, oh, yeah. You know, maybe you can start doing just random searches to throw Google off.
Right. Like, you know. I've been doing nothing but watching Justin Bieber videos trying to bring my age down.
Once they have you pegged as a 55-year-old man, though, no, they're going to be like, uh-oh. Police, this is where Peter Sagal lives.
Carl, how did John do in our quiz?
Well, John had enough correct answers, Peter, so John, you win our prize.
Well, congratulations. Done.
Congratulations, John, and thanks for playing.
Thank you.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in beautiful downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and information, you can go to WBEZ.org. You can find a link at our website, which is, .npr.org, home of Sandwich Monday. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Brian, everybody in the political world has been trying to solve a puzzle. Why exactly did Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona do what to President Obama?
Drama. She pointed her finger in the
face. She did. She got all up in his grill. This much is clear. The governor met the president at his plane when he landed in Arizona, and they talked about something, and it seemed to get heated, and Brewer pointed her index finger at the president.
I don't think that was a... When I looked at the picture, it didn't look like a... I've seen some finger pointing.
Yeah.
Okay, and that looked just like a... And then someone took a picture.
Oh, really?
It didn't look like a mean finger pointing.
Or more, it was like, look, I drew a little face in the end of my index finger. Like he talks to you. Maybe it was that.
Maybe Obama had a giant piece of, like, a nacho on his mouth.
Yeah, oh, look, Mr. President.
Like, Mr. President, you have a nacho on your mouth.
Yeah.
And I she's screaming at him.
It's possible. You never know. She says the president was angry at her because of something she wrote about him in a recent book. President says, no big deal. It's completely cordial. Nobody got angry. According to lip readers, the governor took one look at the president and reflexively asked him for his green card. It's Arizona. It's her duty to do that now under the law.
Air Force One didn't land. It got pulled over.
Yeah. Coming up, a very lazy Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And author Jack Gantos joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. And Pimsleur Language Programs, whose unlimited series offers the potential to play Bluff the Listener in a foreign language at Barnes & Noble Booksellers. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
The following poem is brought to you by the Nashville Public Library, where books are only half the story. The library's alive at night with programs sure to excite. There are places to park at night when it's dark for an evening of fun and delight. The Nashville Public Library presents the Night at the Library series with cartoonist and comedian Lee Rubin, January 31st at 7 p.m., reception at 6:15. Details at library.nashville.org.
In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, reports of economic green shoots, again. Political junkie Ken Rudin returns with returns from the Florida primary, and on Tuesday, why one writer resolves to seek out the other side in the political debate. I'm Neil Conan. That and much more in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 48 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Peter Gross, Roxanne Roberts, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Justin from Marshall, Minnesota.
Hey, how are things in Marshall?
Actually, for January, pretty darn good.
Right, meaning you're not, like, dying every time you go outside.
Not buried under 6 feet of snow.
Well, welcome to our show, Justin. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Justin's topic?
I'd tell you the topic, but it's too much work.
Right. We Americans used to be innovators, then we got lazy. So now we're reduced to being innovative in our laziness. This week our panelists are going to tell you stories about how something that made things easy now makes them even easier. Guess the true story will win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or your voicemail. First up, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
Remote controls used to be so easy, but now, well, they're work. Too many different remotes, too many buttons to figure out. It's exhausting. So, just in time for the Super Bowl, the remote control sofa. The founders of Couch Potato Inc., motto, we move so you don't have to, created a computerized command center with just five big buttons. On, off, channels, food, and beer. The $999 couch is pre-programmed to ESPN, ESPN2, and the Playboy Channel. The food button sends a custom prepaid order to local pizza or takeout joints, and there's a built-in cooler in the sofa's arms, but if you run out, the beer button sends an order to a local vendor who guarantees home delivery in 45 minutes or less. Creator Jeff Turk told the Wall Street Journal he came up with the idea after he couldn't set up his new $1,700 smart TV. Quote, I like my remotes and my women uncomplicated.
A remote control couch makes couch surfing that much easier. Your next story of something that was a cheat becoming even cheatier comes from Brian Babylon.
Back in the day, if you had to read Hamlet, you didn't read Hamlet, you read the Cliff Note versions of Hamlet. But even then, that was a pain. You still had to read the Cliff Notes. But that was then. The new series Cliff Note Films offers its students a fun new way to maintain their low test scores while watching cartoons. The first four animated videos take on Hamlet, Julius Caesar, and two other Shakespeare plays. In addition to being brief and colorful, the language has been improved. Now Romeo kisses Juliet on the balcony and says, quote, OMG, like that was so hot. Let's totes get married.
Cliff Notes Films, even less effort than Cliff Notes. And your last story of the latest thing in sloth comes from Peter Gross.
Driving can be dangerous. Other cars zooming past you, hazardous road conditions, maybe inclement weather, all make it almost impossible to focus on your primary responsibility behind the wheel, scarfing down your hamburger and french fries. That's why a local Whataburger franchise in Seminole, Texas came up with the Whataburger Whatabag. You simply go to the drive-thru, order your food, and it's delivered to you in a plastic bag you strap onto your face. Voila! You're now free to cruise around town in safety and style. Franchise owner Carter Downing celebrates the new convenience. We knew it was handy for people to skip coming inside the restaurant, says Downing, but I thought, man, wouldn't it be great if they didn't have to use their hands while they were eating while they were driving? Not surprisingly, the Whatabag has caught on and people have even started wearing them outside of their cars. It frees up my hands to do lots of other stuff, said Seminole resident Lewis Moxley, like working on the computer or getting more ketchup or tucking in my kids at night. You can do anything with this bag on your face.
All right. here are the choices. One of these things is out there to make your life even easier than it is now, and I know your life is easy. From Roxanne Roberts, a remote control couch with a button for food on it. From Brian Babylon, Cliff Notes Films, like Cliff Notes, you don't have to learn to read to use. And from Peter Gross, the Whataburger Whatabag.
Well, as much as I like the idea of a remote control couch, and it sounds perfect for a man cave, I think I'm actually going to have to go with the Cliff Notes.
You're going to go with the Cliff Notes, Brian's story of Cliff Notes Films, animated versions of the Shakespeare classics?
Yeah, just I'm going to have to go with that one.
All right, that's your choice. Well, we actually have a sample of it for you right here.
Classics come to life. Cliff's Notes present Cliff's Notes Films, only on Cambio.
That was a clip, of course, from Cliff Notes Films. So you were right. Brian had the real story. Congratulations. You're in a point for Brian, and you have won our game. Carl Castle will do his voice abbreviated as you wish.
All right. That's fantastic.
Isn't it, though?
Yes, it is.
Well done.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
They call me lazy. God knows I'm only tired.
Now the game where we invite on interesting people to try and hold their interest. It's called Not My Job. This week, author Jack Gantos won the highest award in children's literature, the Newbery Medal, for his novel Dead End in Norvelt. He's written several other novels in the Rotten Ralph series for kids, and he's written a memoir about his 18 months in the federal pen on drug smuggling charges. We don't know if that one had pictures. Jack Gantos, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Pleasure to have you.
No, thank you. Thank you for the introduction.
So we're excited. First of all, congratulations on the big win, the Newbery Medal. That's quite an honor. One winner a year. It's just fabulous.
Yeah, it is.
So I was reading your book, and it's about a kid named, let me check, Jack Gantos.
Yes.
Who is growing up in a town called Norvelt.
Yes.
In Pennsylvania, which is a real town where you yourself grew up.
Yes.
Is this book autobiographical? We can only assume, since the character is named after you and growing up, where you grew up, when you grew up there.
Yeah. All those three things point to autobiographical.
Yeah, they would. We referred to the drug smuggling. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. I was on my own in 12th grade. I lived in a welfare motel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And then I was going to go to college to write books, but I drove up to University of Florida. It looked just like my high school, a giant football facility with a small academic institution like a tent. So I decided not to go and write novels in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. And I could work all day and drink all night, but I didn't feel fulfilled until I ran into these really nice British guys who had a boat with 2,000 pounds of hashish on it, and they said, "We're looking for a nice kid." I said, "I'm nice." They said, "We'll give you $10,000 to sail it to New York." That's 4 years of private school back then. I said, sure. I didn't know how to sail. I ran aground in the harbor. But
meaning the harbor leaving or the harbor arriving?
Both, actually. We got to New York. We docked it. And then we used to sell them. We would put big duffel bags full of hashish in stolen shopping carts and go through the streets of New York City and deliver them to apartments.
This sounds like the perfect crime, Jack. I can't imagine how you ever got caught.
Yeah, well, you should have seen the surveillance.
Wait a minute. You are pushing a stolen shopping cart down the streets of New York with a duffel bag filled with hashish. And I'm imagining you running across another young woman doing the same thing, and you're like, "Hello, who are you?" And she's like, "I'm Judy Blume. Who are you?" And I'm like, and you're like, "Maybe we'll meet again someday at the Newbery Awards."
Well, the whole thing was rigged from the beginning because the British guys used American counterfeit money to buy the hashish in Morocco, and then the Secret Service got involved because there was all that bad money floating around. So they followed the boat, and then once I got on it, then they had aerial surveillance of the boat across the Atlantic Ocean, and so they had been watching it all along. All they were waiting to do was catch everybody. So then once we sold all the hashish, I moved into the Chelsea Hotel, a fine establishment for any writer.
Yeah.
And
no drugs there.
And then after that, I got paid. I got $10,000 in $10 bills. God, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And then The FBI came in, the Secret Service came in, the customs officers came in, and I went out the back window of the Chelsea Hotel, but the guy who owned the boat went down to the lobby. He got popped, and I made it to the train station and took a train down to Florida.
Now, did they pay you in fake money?
You know, I never knew.
All right. So this is the most exciting interview we've ever had. So yeah. You're in the train.
I'm on the train.
Everybody's after you.
I dye my hair in one of those little train bathrooms.
No, really? So you're down there, you're dyeing your hair, there's a soundtrack, bum, 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 bum. And then what happens?
I got a rash, and then...
What's so amazing is I can so see the trajectory that leads from this to children's literature. But go on. So you're in the train. You're dyeing your hair. You have a rash now. You have blonde hair and a rash.
I go back to the welfare motel, which was run by Davy Crockett's great-great-granddaughter.
Where? This is in Florida?
In Florida.
In Florida, of course.
She had his wallet in her bra. And at any rate, that's another story. And,
yeah.
And, So at any rate, I called home. I thought, maybe I should call home. So I called my father, and he said, where the H are you? He said, I've got the FBI parked in the driveway. They're reading our mail and tapping our phones. And I said, I'm at a pizza parlor. And from there, I got an attorney. Now, don't do this. My attorney, honest to God, was Alfred E. Newman.
I love that you've gotten this far in the story before telling us, now don't do this, kids. You can smuggle the hashish. You can flee.
But if you hire a fictional character,
so here's where I don't want you to be like me.
And so, at any rate, so I go to court, I dress up, I look nice, and the judge, you know, asked me if I have anything to say for myself. I go... I'm guilty, Your Honor, but I'm a very nice boy. And he looks at me and he says, nice boys don't smuggle dope. And I was like, oh, you got me there.
So you went off to jail and you got out relatively soon.
I did about a year and a half. I went down to the prison library.
They may have gone to the same college.
Right.
Got the Barron's Guide and found a college that looked like it was going out of business. And I sent away for the application, which you're not fooling anybody because the letter has, you know, U.S. Department of Corrections in purple ink on it.
Right.
And so I filled it out. And you know the college essay that you sweat over?
Yeah.
I wrote one sentence.
What?
Will pay cash. I was accepted instantly.
Yeah.
And so I took that to my caseworker, and he said, wow, this is so interesting. Nobody's done this. And they had a special parole session, and they let me out, and I went straight from a jail cell to a college dorm room, and it was the exact same construction.
Yeah. I mean, how did you then become an award-winning children's author?
Well...
Oh, I'm sorry. We're out of time. No, I kid. I'm genuinely curious how you go from prison to there.
Well, there is a little bit of work in between there,
yeah.
The transitional period. So at any rate, I always liked children's literature, and so I started writing picture books. And I wrote the Rotten Ralph books, and then I took them to the publisher when I was a sophomore in college, still on parole, and started placing picture books out there in the world. And then finally what happened is I started writing more novels. And I started winning some awards, National Book Award, nominee, and a Newbery Honor for the Joy Pigza books. And I felt like I had a little bit of armor. So then I thought, well, this is the drug smuggling story. It's good. You know it's good. So I wrote that.
Now, we heard, I don't know if this is true, but we were looking into you, and there is a rumor that when you were running up and down the streets of New York in your shopping cart, that you buried about $5,000 worth of hashish in Central Park. Is that true?
That is.
It is true. Is it still there?
I wasn't going to tell you that.
Is it there?
No. Well, Jack Gantos, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Oh, darling, Take me in your arms.
You write very well for kids and young adults, but when people get older, their tastes change, and many then turn to romance novels. We're going to ask you three questions about those saucy novels, and if you get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Carl, who is Jack Antos playing for?
Jack is playing for Eli Barnes of Madison, Wisconsin.
First question. Over the years, Harlequin Romance, the big imprint, has developed a number of specialty lines of romance novels for particular tastes, including which of these? A, Harlequin NASCAR. B, Harlequin Survivalist. Or C, Harlequin Democrat.
Wow. Okay, let's see. What's the most romantic there? Democrat? Nope. Survival? Or I go with NASCAR.
You're going to go with NASCAR. You're right. Romance novel author Susan Anderson had to apologize for a typo that changed the meaning of a line in one of her books. Was it A, that the hero was not, quote, desperately in need of a little late-night cookie? B, the couple did not, in fact, make sweat love? Or C, the line she had written as, quote, she felt his muscles loosen as he shifted on the ground, came out much differently when the printer got a letter wrong.
You know, all three of them are pretty graphic.
It is true.
I have to go with the last one. Yeah.
The line that she wrote as she felt his muscles loosen as he shifted on the ground came out quite differently.
Yes.
That's right. That's what happened. She had to write it. She had to post in her blog a rather exercised apology for that typo. All right, you're doing very well. Here's your last one. Romance novels cater to all tastes, which is why one bookseller is offering which of these sets of romance novels with a similar theme. A, the airport security bundle, including Love at First Flight and The Jet Set Seduction. B, the Hot Hot Kitchen collection, including The Long Order Cook and Turkey with Extra Stuffing. Or C, the Nerd Box, including Erotic Robotics and The Empire Strokes Back.
I got to tell you, because I already pulled it together for Eli here, so
yes,
now I don't have to even think. So I'm going for the Nerd Box.
You're going for the Nerd Box. I wish there was a Nerd Box of romance novels, but it was really the airport security bundle, of course. It's a strange theme. Carl, how did Jack do in our quiz?
Well, enough to win, Peter. He had two correct answers, so Jack, you win for Eli Barnes.
Well done. Congratulations. Jack Annos' book, Dead End in Norvell, just won the 2012 Newbery Medal. Jack Annos, thank you so much for joining us. And wait, wait, thank you. Thank you. In just a minute, Carl lets his stubble loose in our Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. And the Pew Charitable Trusts, working with states to reform the voting process for military and overseas citizens at pewtrusts.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Romney says illegal immigrants should self-deport. Gingrich says grandmothers can stay in this country. How are the Republicans doing with Latino voters? I'm Orman Olney. On To the Point, half of America's recent population growth comes from the children of Latino citizens who tend to vote Democratic. Can Republicans figure a way to appeal to the next generation? Next time, on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock.
The late Irish philosopher and poet John O'Donohue defined beauty as a human calling and an antidote to our deepest modern crises. We recognize beauty, he said. In its presence, we feel more alive. Experience his Celtic sense of the invisible world and how the spiritual and material intertwine in human life. Please join me from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock. Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from West Nashville United Methodist Church, presenting an evening with songwriters L. Russell Brown, Roger Cook, Larry Henley, Rafe Von Van Hoy, and Carrie Kurt Phillip. Saturday, February 18th at 4710 Charlotte Avenue, westnashvilleumc.org. And support comes from the generous support of Nashville Public Radio members. You can join our community of supporters by making a tax-deductible contribution at WPLN.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Brian Babylon, Roxanne Roberts, and Peter Gross. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl investigates Mitt Romney's tax returns in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Peter, we all know foodies are concerned with where their meat was raised and what it was fed and how it lived and if it was comfortable, you know. Well, now restaurants report more and more diners want to know what about their meat.
Who its parents were?
Yes, it has to come from a good family.
Yeah. With breeding, in addition to all that stuff. They want to know, let's see, is it along those lines? It's more of that
No, I'll give you a hint. They're trying to decide whether they should use a pink napkin or a blue napkin.
Oh, if it was male or female?
Yeah, that's apparently a big concern, male or female. They want to know the gender of their entree. Now, there are certain meats that you know the sex of. There's Rocky Mountain oysters, skirt steak, but you don't always know if your chicken was a hen or a rooster, or if your hamburger enjoyed Vin Diesel movies, or if the pig you're eating was paid on average 17% less than its male counterpart. The theory is that hormones differ between male and female animals, and it makes for a slight difference in taste. You know, so many restaurants are asking if they want a same-sex or traditional relationship with their lunch.
Well, is that true?
That's true.
You know, snobby people can ruin food so quickly.
Yeah, I know.
Unbelievable.
Now, this is just a technical question.
Yeah.
But are chicken breasts...
I don't think it matters.
I've been eating man chicken breasts this whole time.
No! You're so disappointed.
Wait a minute. How excited were you to eat female chicken breasts?
That's what I thought was going on.
Brian, kids love Tony the Tiger, the Trix Rabbit, all those fun mascots, while some opposed to the marketing of sugary cereals to children are protesting with what?
Like some type of boycott?
Well, it's a version of Tony the Tiger.
Yeah, but he...
That is what?
He's in shape. Well, that guy was in shape.
Well, I was about to say, the original Tony the Tiger is pretty buff.
He was pretty buff. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'll give you a hint. It's greatly fattening.
Fat Tony the Tiger.
A fat Tony the Tiger, yes.
Yeah.
Ever wondered what Tony the Tiger would look like if he actually ate the breakfast cereal he sells?
I don't know. It's the stripes that make him look fat.
That's right. Well, artist Ron English's new Fat Tony is about four times the normal size. Carries a lot of the weight in the belly.
He reads comic books.
He does. Doesn't get a lot of exercise. English hopes that Fat Tony the Tiger will make kids more aware of the dangers of eating all that sugary cereal. But sadly, all it seems to have done is to create a new market for out-of-shape cereal mascots. Instead of a ship, Captain Crunch now has a mobility schooner. And Snap, Crackle, and Pop are now listless, diabetic, and clutching his chest.
Toucan Sam can barely get off the ground. Well, that's what Grimace is. Grimace is just like kids.
What is
you
Grimace?
Might look like this
no,
one day.
Yeah.
Swollen and purple, and you barely see your feet.
Peter, as you know, the wedding planning industry is huge, and according to Good Morning America, a number of companies are now helping women plan their perfect day, even if they don't have what?
A fiancé?
Exactly right. Planning a wedding before you have a boyfriend...
is crazy.
Well... What is that?
It's in the American tradition. It's pre-engaged.
Yeah, exactly. Pre-engaged. No, what it is, it's planning a wedding without a groom is both a hot new trend, apparently, and it's the worst possible hobby to mention in your OkCupid profile. Roxanne, PBS is in legal trouble with the makers of the hugely popular Downton Abbey miniseries for doing what without their permission?
I need a hint. I don't know.
Well, is that a real Lord Grantham belly ring?
Merchandising?
Yes.
Trashy?
Yes.
Non-period specific?
Yes.
Memorabilia?
Yes!
Very good.
Well, what they're doing is they're selling knockoff jewelry named for the show's characters. So if you want the Lady Mary pearl necklace and earring set, you better hurry, because PBS apparently never got permission to sell the Edwardian jewelry from the producers of the series. But the question here isn't so much, you know, what was PBS thinking in doing this and sort of jumping the gun legally, so much as what was your boyfriend thinking when he bought you a necklace from PBS? Here, honey, I got this for you from PBS, because you, too, make me feel like I'm 20 years older than I actually am.
Yeah. When you wear this necklace, you look like Maggie Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, why are you mad at me? I bought you a necklace.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank. But first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website. That's waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out our How to Do Everything podcast. This week, how to stop the president when he wants to put a really bad joke in his State of the Union speech. We know who should listen to that one. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jessica Hirshhorn from Bethesda, Maryland.
Hey, Jessica, how are you?
I'm fine.
How are things in Bethesda?
Cold.
Yes. What do you do to enjoy yourselves in Bethesda?
I walk, I bike.
Yeah?
I garden. I try to grow vegetables.
How's it go?
Not so good.
Well, welcome to the show, Jessica. It's nice to have you with us. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, of course, complete them two times out of three. Ready to do it?
You bet.
Let's hear the first one.
I have seen how they keep bovine trotters fed, and they're kept in some real shabby squatter's shed. But when my cows get rest, they get only the best. My cows go to sleep on a...
waterbed.
Yes! Waterbed. Okay, this is true. Some farmers in Ohio swear that letting their cows sleep on waterbeds makes them more comfortable. It means better milk. The problem is, though, the cows who sleep on the waterbeds tend to be a certain type. It's easy to tell if the cow has a mullet and a Corvette. It's a waterbed cow. If your hamburger tastes like Axe body spray, it was a waterbed cow.
Do you know anybody who still has a waterbed?
We were asked one.
You sit next to one, baby.
A waterbed in a DeLorean.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Just imagine the cows hanging out, you know. One is waterbed, shirt open, gold chain hanging down to its udders, you know.
This is the life.
Must be nice.
It's a good life.
You guys want to go upstairs and do some powdered milk?
Here's your next limerick.
The Disneyland employees cheered. No more must our stubble be cleared. Let's all have a race to grow hair on our face, for we workers may now grow a...
beard.
Yes, as you know, Disney, very strict place to work, the theme parks. They've had a strict dress code. They've not allowed facial hair. It makes sense. You can't send out Cinderella with stubble. You'll shatter some kids' dreams. This week, Disney announced that for the first time ever, workers will now be allowed to grow beards or very cool goatees. This will make the Seven Dwarves more accurate. will teach kids a lesson about what happens to Sleeping Beauty after she's been in bed for 100 years.
But, Peter, if I take my family to Walt Disney World and spend, what, $1,000 for 2 days, I want everyone to be clean-shaven and looking awesome.
Really?
Yeah, you can go to Starbucks if you need a bearded employee to help you out with something. Yeah.
What's next?
I don't know. Lefties are allowed to work here. Yeah.
All right, very good. Here's your last limerick.
When patients are in nitrous vapor's grip, sometimes I let the odd scraper slip. And then root canal wise, I'll use office supplies, and I hold things in place with a...
paperclip.
Yes, indeed, paperclip. Well done. You know that old saying, desperate times call for horrifyingly unhygienic measures. This week, a Massachusetts dentist admitted he'd substituted stainless steel posts in the root canals he was doing with bits of paperclip. Asked why, Dr. Michael Clare said something we have no idea what it was because his mouth was stuffed with post-it notes. Carl, how did Jessica do?
Jessica had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Jessica, congratulations. You win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now it is time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our panelists now has 60 seconds to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each question now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Brian Babylon has the lead, Peter. He has 5 points. Roxanne Roberts and Peter Gross are tied for second. They both have 2 points each.
Okay. We have flipped a coin. Peter is elected to go first, so here we go. Fill in the blank. This week, SEAL Team 6 staged a raid and rescued 2 hostages being held in blank.
Somalia.
Right. Memorial services were held at Penn State for former coach Blank, who died last weekend at age 85.
Joe Paterno.
Right. On Tuesday morning, the movies Hugo and The Artist received the most blank nominations.
Academy Award nominations.
Yes, saying it's more like a divining rod since it features no maps. A technology firm released an app that will point users in the direction of blank.
Gold!
The nearest taco. Heidi Klum announced this week that she and her husband, singer Blank, were separating.
SEAL.
Yes. You're out. Aerosmith singer Steven Tyler drew anger from fans for his performance of the Blank last Sunday.
Oh, of the national anthem?
Yes. The board of a new high school in Utah rejected the mascot Blank because it was deemed too offensive to middle-aged women.
The Hot Flash.
No. No, the Cougars. The Cougars.
Oh, of course.
Didn't matter.
I should have thought about that for more than a second. Probably would have come up with the answer.
It didn't matter that students overwhelmingly voted to call themselves the Corner Canyon Cougars. The school board rejected the term, perhaps fearing the wrath of angry PTA moms or Madonna. Instead, the school board decided on the Corner Canyon Old Broads. Carl, how did Peter do in our quiz?
Peter had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He has 12 points, and Peter has the lead.
Very well done. All right. Roxanne, you are up next. Fill in the blank. To emphasize President Obama's new tax plan known as the Buffett Rule, Warren Buffett's secretary was seated next to Michelle Obama during the blank.
State of the Union.
Right. On Thursday, Iranian President Ahmadinejad said he is open to resuming talks with the West about Iran's blank program.
Nuclear.
Right. With the conference championships concluded, the New England Patriots and the New York Giants prepared to meet next weekend at the blank.
Super Bowl.
Yes. The Supreme Court ruled this week that it is a Fourth Amendment-protected search if police install a blank on a suspect's car.
GPS.
Right. A Florida fire department is honoring a 7-year-old girl who saved her unconscious mother by blanking and calling 911.
Hitting her with a pizza slice.
Indeed, that's what helped. On Tuesday, 45 hours of personal recordings made during the last 3 months of President Blank's life were released.
JFK.
Right. After asking Twitter users to post their best McDonald's memories, McDonald's was surprised that they posted Blank instead.
Burger King memories?
No, they posted really horrible memories of eating McDonald's food.
Of course.
No, McDonald's wanted people to post things like, oh, I had the best McFlurry ever. But instead they got messages like, hair in my Big Mac. The worst case scenario, though, those were people's best McDonald's memories. Colonel, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Roxanne now has 14 points, and she has the lead.
Well done. All right. How many, then, does Brian Babylon need to win this thing?
5 correct answers.
All right, here we go, Brian. This is for the game. On Wednesday, Arizona Representative Blank resigned to focus on her recovery.
Gabby Gifford.
Right. This week, Michelle Obama and the Department of Agriculture announced new guidelines for school blank.
Lunches.
Right. The Commerce Department announced Thursday that 2011 had been the worst year for blank sales on record.
Housing.
Yes. Illinois Senator Mark Kirk underwent surgery Tuesday after suffering a blank last weekend.
Stroke.
Right. Transportation officials in Manhattan corrected a school crossing mislabeled as blank.
Safe.
No, it was mislabeled as a school crossing.
School.
Monday marked the beginning of the Chinese New Year's Year of the Blank.
Dragon.
Yes, you're the dragon. On Thursday, Media Takeout announced that Beyonce and Jay-Z had selected blank to be their baby's godmother.
Oh, Apple's mom.
No, Oprah. Kentucky State Senate bill honoring an aquarium's stewardship of penguins was nearly derailed when blank.
The real penguin showed up.
No, when a penguin pooped in the Senate floor.
Terrible.
During a presentation about the penguin, Senate President David Williams looked down and said, "Are we talking about the penguin that just defecated on the floor?" Williams was not thrown. He said, and this is true, he said, "Well, let's see if Miss Kentucky can top that." To which I say, no, let's not. Carl, did Brian do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers, and he had 5 correct answers.
So my first time. You know what? Let me just say, I have dreamed about beating Roxanne on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You have no idea. It's on my vision board.
Really?
Yeah.
Hope you enjoy it. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists what will be the next really bad joke at the State of the Union address. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Pimsleur, whose unlimited series of language programs offers the tools to learn a listener limerick challenge in a variety of languages at Barnes & Noble booksellers, and eSurance, offering online tools and 24/7 service, insurance for the modern world. More at eSurance.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, distant critic. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our brand new intern is Kate Casey. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Pilarczyk and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will that bad presidential joke be? Brian Babylon.
Next year, the bad joke will actually come from John Boehner when he gooses Obama.
Roxanne Roberts.
The president will show up wearing this T-shirt. I spent $100 million to get elected, and all I got is this stupid Congress.
And Peter Gross.
The joke will be on all of us when a 4-hour rambling, self-aggrandizing diatribe of a State of the Union will be delivered by President Newt Gingrich.
Well, if the president says any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Roxanne Roberts, and Peter Gross. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. We will. This is NPR.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
From mythological monsters to civil rights in Middle Tennessee, youngsters can experience a diverse array of summer camp offerings at Pope John Paul II High School in Hendersonville. Fishing, knitting, tennis, and lacrosse, there's something to inspire every child at Camp JP2. Details are at jp2hs.org/camp. Pope John Paul II High School. Faith leads us beyond ourselves.
Nashville weather for the rest of the afternoon, sunny skies and the high in the mid.